Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across the table from me is my wife, Bianca Reichert.
Hi.
How are you doing, Bianca Reichert?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What just happened?
I don't know. I was just doing what you were doing. I thought that's what we were
I
doing.
I laughed?
No, you went,
I did?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember that. Will that show in the audio when I'm editing this?
I hope so, because then I'll just sound like a crazy person.
Okay, well, now I feel like a crazy person, which maybe we are, because we just spent an hour and 20 minutes of our lives, of our limited time here on this rock we call Earth, watching Ghoulies.
Ghoulies. Not to be confused with Gremlins.
No, and I think we were both a little bit confused here, because there are three movies that are very 80s-centric that I feel like you hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Gremlins, mm-hmm. which Gremlins I'm very familiar with. I've seen them both, including Gremlins 2, The New Batch, a just incredible.
It's a classic.
Incredible film. I can't recommend watching Gremlins 2, The New Batch enough. It's just a great thing to watch. Gremlins 1, also good, plays it a little more straight. for a movie about wacky things growing out of eggs and shooting eggs out of their back, and you know, it's a weird movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Gremlins,
mm-hmm.
you got Goonies, which also is from the 80s. I have not seen that. I think that's about kids going on a treasure hunt.
Is that where that famous like picture that's on t-shirts of that kid with the baseball bat is from? He's like, you're killing me, Smalls.
That's Sandlot. You're thinking of Sandlot. There's a famous, I don't know if it's a shirt or just the image. I think there's a kid named Sloth who has like a melty face or something. I think he's from Goonies. And I think, you're killing me, Smalls is from Sandlot. What's the other one? There's some line from Goonies. I can't remember what the hell it is. There's another like famous thing that you see photos of and shirts of and everything. I don't know. Sloth is the kid that, like, there's a melty-faced kid, and then there's a kid who lifts up his shirt and, like, dodges bullets or deflects bullets or something, and I think they look for treasure, and Steven Spielberg produced it. I don't know shit about Goonies, if you can't tell.
No, I can't tell. You seem to be an encyclopedia
on this film. Yes, a walking wiki article. So you got Gremlins, you got Goonies, and you got Ghoulies.
Yes.
And I don't know if there was ever a sequel to The Goonies. There's only one to Gremlins. Turns out there are four Ghoulies movies.
There's at least two Gremlins.
No, two Gremlins. I don't know if there's two Goonies. I don't know if I said that wrong. But four Ghoulies. So if we've not confused you enough, Ghoulies is the one we watched. This is on Amazon Prime. And I think this gets confused with Gremlins, maybe, or maybe you got confused with Gremlins. You haven't seen the first Gremlins, have you?
I have not.
Okay, because this also, if you look at the cover, it's a weird gremlin-looking dude popping out of a toilet.
Yeah, which that never happens in the movie.
It does.
It happens in the movie?
It was very quick.
Oh, well, jeez. I would think it would be more of a show if it's on the cover.
Well, it was at the end, and it was just like a very quick shot. It wasn't like, it didn't get a feature spot like in Killer Clowns from Outer Space when the clown comes out of the toilet. No, it was just in the middle of a bunch of wacky stuff happening in this haunted manor. They cut to a toilet, and one of them just like, blah, pops up. And I read on the wiki that that was shot after the fact because it was already the poster, and somebody decided like, well, it should probably be in the movie, and so they just shot a blah, little puppet
That's
thing coming
wise.
Out of a toilet. Yeah.
This is one of those movies where just a bunch of things just happen. Like, not at all tied to one another. It's just, like, a series of events.
Maybe extremely loosely.
But there's absolutely no, like, fabric to tie anything together. It's all just, like, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened.
With no sense at all of, like I think we might already be overthinking Ghoulies more than the makers of the four Ghoulies movies did. Because it does just seem like this scattershot, just like you said, here's just a bunch of shit happening. Here's a bunch of characters that, you know, they don't even, like, really try to develop at all.
It seemed like the director had a bunch of things he could do, like, special effects-wise, and was like, let's build a movie around this.
Yeah, and I will say, let's start with something nice here. Those Ghoulies look pretty good. They're practical effects. They got, like, the hair and stuff, and their teeth look really, like, good and gnarly. I think the Ghoulies themselves look good.
Okay, I disagree.
Yeah?
Yes, I disagree.
You don't like them?
I don't like them. I don't think they look that good.
I especially like the one with, like, the underbite and the sharp teeth that looked like an evil Furby and the big eyes. Like, I thought that guy was real cool.
Have you ever seen the movie Basket Case? I think I might have shown you the trailer for it.
That sounds familiar.
It's this, like, it's an 80s movie, just, like, same level of camp as this one, where this kid, I think it's his, like, twin brother, who he keeps in a basket because he's this weird monster that, like, kills people.
The brother is the weird monster?
Yeah.
Wait, I think you may have told me about this because I think one of the later, like, later at this point, not later, but, like, one of the Treehouse of Horrors on on The Simpsons is Bart had a brother named Hugo that was like kept in an attic, and he was like really weird. And like, I think it might have been loosely based on that. Does that sound familiar at all?
I don't know. But Basket Case is a movie that I watched. I feel like it's probably on the same level as this, but superior special effects.
Yeah.
I think that the Basket Case himself looked a little better than these gremlins.
Is he a puppet?
Yeah, I think so. It's the same deal as these things.
Okay.
Which I assume these are puppets, right?
Yeah, it's definitely practical effects. I mean, I'm sure they were all controlled probably by like an actual hand up there.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like they take puppets and then just cover them with translucent goop.
Yeah, there's a lot of goop going on.
It's a very moist film.
Yeah, a lot of slime going on.
Spontaneous rain in the basement.
Yeah, that happens during one of the rituals, which that's okay, so we're not even going to try to explain the whole plot of this movie, but we'll hit the main beats here.
Well, we can easily explain the whole plot of the movie.
Okay.
Because it's just this guy who inherits this creepy house. And then, I guess, gets possessed by the house and starts trying to conjure these ghoulies who kill the friends. And then this is all part of a ritual to reanimate his dead father.
Malcolm Graves.
Yeah, Malcolm, who used to be, I guess, at the head of this ghoulies cult.
Yeah, we see the first scene is him trying to, like, there's a baby, and I think we find out later he was trying to, like, steal the youth of the baby, but, like, the mom won't give him up.
Yeah, that first scene, I mean, there's a lot of really confusing scenes, but this first scene, I guess, because it was the first part of the movie that I saw, and I kind of, you know, I approach everything with kind of like, okay, I have low expectations, but let's see where this goes. And then, like, once the first scene really confuses me, the subsequent equally confusing scenes won't be as, like, weird for me, because it's like, all right, they're setting the bar for things making no sense right from the jump.
Right.
But in this first scene, it's like this, you think it's like a satanic ritual. The guy, the head of the cult, even refers to Lucifer, right?
Yeah.
There's little ghoulies everywhere, and someone brings him a baby. And this lady who, like, one of many cult members in the audience, she's dressed from head to toe in, like, this white robe, like, not like KKK robe, but, like, just a weird...
More like a weird cleric, religious type robe.
Yeah, and her face is covered, yeah. And she's obviously, like, whole hog into the satanic cult.
They all seem pretty into it down there.
They seem super into it. You have to be, like, you had to have been ingratiating this cult for a long time to get to the point where you're wearing that outfit in the basement, singing chants along with this guy, like totally into whatever ritual is about to happen. And yet, as soon as she sees the baby, it's like, no, not the baby. What was her? Oh, yeah, you said not on child. I guess it was,
not on child.
That's what she said. I guess he was about to like sacrifice the baby to get its youth or whatever. But it's like, if you were, let's say, Dan, you were in a cult, right?
Okay.
And this cult has been growing, like, brainwashing you over the course of, like, years.
I mean, I'm a wrestling fan, so...
Yeah,
okay.
And it's to the point where you are participating in these rituals without a second thought. You're wearing these outfits that, you know, everyone else is wearing. And
basement meetups.
You don't even think about it. It's just, this is my life now.
I've learned Latin.
Yeah, and then, like, why would a baby sacrifice phase you at that point if you're that deep into it? It's not even like she goes up to him and he's like... And she's like, Malcolm, we should probably consider this. There has to be another way. It's like, no, she goes from 100% wholly into Satan. That's Wholey, not Holy.
Of course.
To no, save the baby. It seems like a huge jump for me. I feel like someone who's already on that level would be a little more accepting of baby sacrifice. I'm just saying.
I feel like, yeah, the cult thing, I think it comes with the whole territory of like, no matter what the dude says, you're doing that. Whether that's, hey, drink this weird Kool-Aid or go murder Sharon Tate.
Yes.
It is a long history of cult followers just doing whatever crazy bullshit the leader says.
Yeah, so the groundskeeper, this guy, what was his
Wolfgang.
Name? Wolfgang.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we learn he's a groundskeeper, but he clearly hasn't been keeping the grounds because the house is in horrible condition.
Yeah, we just kind of see him hanging around.
He's just he's not really doing much of anything. But he was in this cult that we see in the first scene, and he, too, is equally, I guess, plucked out of the, shaken by this baby sacrifice, potential baby sacrifice.
Wasn't on board, necessarily.
Was not on board. So he collects the baby and they leave. And then he still hangs around, I guess, as the groundskeeper, just not doing anything.
Yeah, because it seems like the house is still kind of around for like years and years and years. I think they even say like 25 years at some point. Until what I presume is the baby. So Jonathan is this character we meet later on. Was he was supposed to be the baby, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, because he was Malcolm's son. He was
right.
Trying to, yeah. So he shows up. So fast forward, we're in the 80s. And I wrote down here that college students in the 80s always looked like they're 40, which we found out later. We looked him up and the actor was actually 36 years old.
Yeah, he was actually. And the girl, Rebecca, the girl who played Rebecca, she was actually in her early 30s as well.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if that's just a... Is that more of an 80s thing? Like, does that happen now? I feel like it's like if Seth Rogen was playing a college student in a movie in 2019.
I definitely don't think you see it as much now. I think now you see a lot of, like, early 20s playing college or high school students or, you know, more. I feel like the era of, like, presenting full-grown adults as high school age people, like Saved by the Bell kind of stuff, is, like, long gone. I think we've wisened up about, like, maybe we shouldn't present these young teenagers as, like, fully formed sexual beings.
Right. It's like we saw that those Happy Death Day movies recently, and it's not like it was like Bradley Cooper playing like college dude in that. It seemed like 22-year-olds or something.
But you know what's interesting? I watched The Graduate, the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie. Dustin Hoffman. Like a few years ago with my family, and the temptress in that movie,
Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah. She's presented as this, like, you know, cougar type, you know, tries to seduce the young college guy.
Yeah.
And she looks like she's in her 50s. That's what I thought she was. I mean, she's a gorgeous woman, but she looks like she's in her 50s. But she was actually only 35 years old. She wasn't, like, she was only, like, 6 years older than Dustin Hoffman in that movie.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
So even when a woman's, like, playing, like, a much older role, like, they got a younger woman to play what is supposed to be an older
character. Well, she looked older, too. It was just...
Did they put makeup and stuff on her?
I don't know, but I think maybe people just didn't take care of their skin as much as they do now.
Just chain smoking.
Yeah, I expect, because she looked to be in her 50s. Like I said, she was a beautiful woman, but she looked to be in her 50s, and I was like, she's 35 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, you don't see that as much anymore.
No, it seems like they're a little more accurate with that stuff now.
For sure, yeah.
So we have a 80s rowdy party time here, mm-hmm. which I feel like I've seen basically this scene in a billion different 80s movies. Mm-hmm. But it's just a bunch of random characters showing up to do party stuff. One of them, Toad Boy, I don't know what the fuck the deal with this guy is. Mark, who his whole character is that he's weird and he talks like he calls himself Toad Boy and talks about tummies a lot.
Yeah, but not even tummies. He says tum. Like,
yeah.
That's even weirder.
He talks like this, a Toad Boy wants your tum. And this is really weird. I didn't like any of it.
Despite his weirdness, he's apparently dating Mariska Hargitay, who, like, I mean, is, I mean, she's way out of his league, let's face it.
Right, like, he's presented as, like, Revenge of the Nerds geek or whatever, and then, yeah. I had not heard of this actress before, and you said, like, oh, she's in this, and she was in Law and Order?
Oh, she's in Law and Order, yeah, that's what, she's the main character in Law and Order. She's been in
the
show for,
aren't
like,
there, like, 14 Law and
years.
Orders?
Well, she's in SVU, I think.
Oh, okay. Is that, like, the main one?
That's the one that is, like, still on right now.
I don't think I've ever seen a second of any Law & Order show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she's most well-known for that.
Oh, okay. I feel like I've seen her on, like, bus ads and stuff.
Yeah, this movie I read was apparently her first, like, real legitimate acting gig. She was in a music video prior to this, but then this was her first film.
It's funny how you hear about that sometimes. Like, wasn't Jennifer Aniston's, like, one of her first big roles was, like, A Nightmare on Elm Street? And, like, Johnny Depp was in one of them.
Really?
No, sorry. Jennifer Aniston, I think, was in one of the Leprechaun movies, and Johnny Depp, I want to say, was in maybe the first Nightmare on Elm Street. I could be wrong. I've not seen any Elm Street or Leprechaun.
It's always cool when you, like, accidentally catch someone's first role in something. Like, Courtney Cox was in a Bruce Springsteen video.
Oh, yeah. That was not Dancing in the Dark? Was that the one where he pulls her on stage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's his name? Matthew McConaughey was in a reenactment for Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like I see that constantly when you're watching Seinfeld, and I'm just like, is that? Like,
oh,
it's like,
yeah,
every actress,
sure,
I've ever heard of throughout the 90s and 2000s, it seems like they've started
totally
there.
They're all there.
Like, huge actresses and stuff. Like, people that became big, big household names, and I guess they were just nobody when they were on the show.
Well, they were somebody.
Well, somebody, but, like, they were not, like, what they became, you
sure,
know? It's like, oh, here's Rebecca Romijn and Sarah Silverman and, you know, these Terry Hatcher and all these, like, soon-to-be huge stars. So anyway, party time's going on. There's this breakdancing character who, upon first glance, looked like a Dana Carvey character to me.
He's just always high, I guess that's his whole thing. Which,
yeah.
I don't, like, I love, especially before, like, smoking pot became more accepted as it is now, looking back on old movies and shows that portray the highness, like being high, is just so inaccurate to what the actual experience is.
And that's the 80s. I mean, you look back at like Reefer Madness type stuff or whatever. And it was like back then it was like, you will literally go nuts and kill your family. And like the 80s is like, whoa, don't bogart that joint.
Like he was just acting like he was drunk, but he's smoking joints and stuff. But I guess when he's breakdancing, a bunch of pills come out of his pocket. So who knows what he's really into.
Right. But yeah, plenty of shenanigans stuff there until the main dude, Jonathan, is just like, hey, guys, let's go do a satanic ritual in my basement.
They're like, we should play Trivial Pursuit. Oh, no, let's play charades.
Right.
Let's do a ritual. And everyone's just totally on board for it. No one specifies. Without any questions.
Yeah, there's no specification. He's not like, oh, let's do this kind of ritual to this end. He's just, let's do a ritual. And everyone's like, fine. Goes into the basement. No one apparently has a problem with the like giant gargoyle statues in front of the like cage thing that we see later on that had to have been there. But anyway, they do this little like ritual. A ghoulie kind of pops up at some point, but nobody but Jonathan knows about the ghoulies at this point.
Well, yeah, and no one has any questions when he's like standing, when Jonathan is standing in front of them, like he had memorized this whole spell, I guess.
Yeah. Well, everyone was high on pot. Of course, they wouldn't ask questions.
If you're high, if you were smoking pot, you would have so many more questions. You'd be like, hold on a minute.
Yes. You'd be up in your head for 20 minutes before you said a word about it, but then you would have a billion questions. Yes, you're right. I think actually the ghoulie shows up afterwards because he does the thing and they're all like, let's go upstairs. And he's like, I have to dispel the spell or something. And then nothing happens. And then they leave and the ghoulie pops up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I almost forget that one girl. I forget her name. I don't even know if she has a name. But she just like screams for no reason.
Is that the one that just disappears randomly?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But she doesn't scream and then disappear. She screams, everyone looks at her, and she's like, I'm sorry. And then she disappears.
Yeah.
And when she disappears, like, I expected her corpse to be somewhere. Like, it was going to be the beginning of this onslaught of ghoulies. But no, she was just found, like, standing in the backyard, just, like, observing a graveyard.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much of that shit in this movie. And, like, when I think of movies of this era, specifically, like, these B... like campy horror movies from the 80s, like the ones that are you never heard of, and there's like 40 of them.
Yeah.
They're always the same thing where it's like there's really no through plot. There's just kind of like a loose setting, and then it's just like this thing happens, and then another thing happens, and then and like you can't really piece together why things are happening. It's you just have to like accept it and be like, all right, I guess that's happening now.
Yeah, it's like you got to come up with a gimmick where it's like, okay, what's the gimmick in this one? Okay, it's killer clowns from outer space. It's like, okay, what are some fun things we could do with that? Oh, you could wrap them up in cotton candy and hang them. Oh, you could, you know, do a boxing glove thing and knock their head off or do shadows on the wall.
Right.
And then just like after you come up with all the fun things you do with the gimmick, it's like, okay, now we got to find some bullshit reason for them to be there and do stuff.
And you know what, Dan? Now that I think about it, what even was the purpose of the ghoulies? I mean, they had no personality whatsoever. At least the gremlins. I mean, you watch Gremlin 2, the new patch. I mean, they're chock full of personality.
They have the pursuit of knowledge, the pursuit of mischief, the pursuit of vegetables, the pursuit of beauty. Gremlins 2, the new batch, just kind of has it all for everyone.
But these ghoulies are just kind of going, and like goo is coming out of them. They really have no discernible desire or personality, or like they just serve Jonathan after he summons them.
I guess if the main objective is for Malcolm to be reanimated and get his youth back, I guess they do like help kill everyone else in the house, but I don't know why that's necessary. Like, I don't know, like, how does Malcolm get his youth back? I know he wanted to kill the baby in the beginning, and that was his initial plan. And since that didn't work, I guess the ghoulies had to help to make the ritual reanimate him so he could go after, who the fuck knows? We're overthinking this way more than the makers did.
What I think would not make sense, but at least, well, not make complete sense, but at least be, like, acceptable would be if this house, and this was never addressed, I'm just assuming that the house possessed Jonathan into, and like manipulated him into performing this ritual so that his father would be reanimated. That's what I think happened. I'm really unsure if that's the case.
They don't make any pains to try to let you know in this movie. It's just, there's no scene where you understand that he like will like look at a seal or something and all of a sudden he's like, oh, he's doing a ritual in the next scene. You know?
Yeah. Frankly, it could have just been a coincidence that his father was reanimated, but also, these two little people.
Yes, the little Viking dwarves, Grizzle and Greedy Gut.
Yeah, they just come out of nowhere. And I mean, they're little people, but they're still humans. I don't know why they are the product of some demonic summation.
It was confusing because they had like elfin ears, but like they never like make any efforts to explain what they are. Are they from some different dimension of like elves or something that's different than the ghoulies? What the fuck are the ghoulies and where do they come from? Like they don't even try to explain any of this besides
I have no idea.
Chanting in Latin and Lucifer fucking whatever.
Yeah. And like they seem totally on board with Jonathan and they're like, oh, we'll drink the wine to show how loyal we are, which, okay. But then later in the movie when like they reveal themselves to be on the side of Malcolm, Jonathan's father, they immediately swerve and then they're like, they save Jonathan from an attack. So it's like...
Yeah.
Or whatever that was, that trap that Rebecca was about to kiss him or whatever. But it's just so, it doesn't make any sense.
I think they're fleshed out a lot more in the novel.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think the movie did him wrong. But Jonathan, yeah, at some point here, he says he's quitting college, 36-year-old college, to fix the house up. And immediately starts, like, giving Rebecca, like, pentagram talismans and, like, doing stuff with like, cloaks and rituals in the basement. Oh, yeah,
that part was really funny. He was like, Rebecca, I have a gift for you. And it's this little jewelry box. And she opens it up. And she's like, oh, thank you. But it's this, like, weird, cheap-looking pentagram necklace.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, it's a talisman. It'll protect you.
From everything.
From what? From everything. That's a little weird.
All right. To look this up here and see what the hell this thing is.
I'd be like, oh, thank you. That's so sweet of you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the chemistry between the two is what really carries the relationship in this film, I think.
Yeah, well, he leaves school to fix up the house, and later that day when Rebecca comes home, the house is all fixed, so he really only needed a day, not an entire year off from school.
Well, it's one day of fixing up the house, and then it's ritual time, because she comes home another day, and he is in the basement, it's raining in the basement, as he's wearing a cloak and holding a trident and chanting in Latin, and so this part just cracked me up, because she walks in on him, and she basically treats it kind of with the severity of like if she walked in on him like watching porn or something. She's like, oh, what are you doing, man? Yeah. Come on. And she goes up to like do the dishes and he's like, I think he's probably still in the cloak at this point. He's like, his explanation is like, look, I don't know my parents. I got sidetracked when I was working on the house. It's like, you were wearing a cloak with a trident chanting in Latin.
I mean, it's a tale as old as time. Whenever you hear about like an adoptive child who goes out to find their biological parents, it always starts with a demonic ritual in the basement.
Of course.
I mean, I've seen a lot of episodes of Oprah and that's always how it starts.
Well, even though it did cause a little bit of rift while she was doing the dishes there, all is well by the time they go to bed because they're both just horny and want to start making out later on that night.
Yeah, she's completely unfazed by that.
Yeah.
All he does to explain what he was doing was say that he wants to, like, find his parents. I would have so many questions.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't ask anything. He doesn't try to explain.
I'm trying to think of how I would react if I came home and you were doing that here.
You would probably think I was fucking with you.
Yeah, well, my first instinct would be to laugh and I would be like, well, what's going on? And then if you just said something like something about your family or whatever, I would be like, I would laugh it off. And then if I saw that you weren't being serious, I would be very concerned.
You would probably leave the house and talk to an authority
of some
sort. I
would not later that day try to have sex with you.
Right.
I would be very concerned.
Also, my eyes are like googly green eyes.
Yeah. Also, when they start getting it on, he starts like mumbling in Latin.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then while he's mumbling in Latin, that makes the ghoulies all kind of pop up around the bed. She doesn't see him, but the ghoulies just kind of want to be near the action, I guess.
Also, there's a glowing pentagram under the bed.
Yes, she does see that. And again, not as phased as I think she probably should be there. I love that. It's like a cut from them fighting about the ritual to them just like making out in her lingerie. It's like, all right, I guess everything's fine here.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A. member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And then we have like a dinner party where everyone has to wear sunglasses, and we never really see how he explains that to everyone. But
it's
like
a sunglasses party.
Yeah, the weird guy Dick. He's got the funky windshield washer ones. Yeah, that Dick guy is a real character. But yeah, dinner party time. Ghoulies are all over the place here. They're coming out of the meat. They're like popping out of soup and stuff, and eating tomatoes.
Yeah, the one ghoulie that popped out of like the hunk of beef. Eats a tomato, which, honestly, of all the weird things in the movie, that kind of troubled me a little bit. I mean, a tomato, he's a ghoulie.
I mean, he cares about health.
There's rare meat surrounding him, and he goes for a little grape tomato.
Maybe he's a vegetarian.
All right, who knows?
We don't know that. But I think the glasses or something are making it so the people can't see the ghoulies. Who fucking cares? I don't know.
No, I think what it was Jonathan had the green eyes.
Right.
And he wanted to conceal his green eyes from everyone at the party because they would obviously be very unnerved if they saw his glowing green eyes.
And so he convinced everyone, like, oh, it's a sunglasses party explain.
Exactly.
I see.
Sunglasses party.
Well, Jonathan somehow kind of like warps everyone to the basement and starts chanting and flying, and everyone just kind of joins the chant, so I guess they're all brainwashed by whatever Latin is happening. And then the Malcolm Graves tombstone starts coming out of the ground, and the most fake-ass zombie makeup in the world. It's just like blue makeup on this old guy's face.
Mm.
So a zombie pops up, starts walking around all weird with his hands, making an X in front of him. And then it's just like montage of these partygoers dying. You got the Toad Boy and Mariska Hargitay. Did I say that
right?
Yes. They're sitting by a fountain. Her bracelet falls in while he's doing a toad act. And then like ghoulies pop out and eat their face or something.
Yeah. We never really see how that death happens.
No, I don't think they wanted to animate it. So we just see him kind of like fly up to their faces and then cut to a back shot. And they're just like, well, the two stoners are just like, she's a screamer. Like, yeah. And then, okay.
Who screams like that when they're getting it on?
Yeah. Help. Help. Yeah. And then ladies man Dick had taken off his funky sunglasses. He's upstairs with his girl in bed, and they just finished coitus, it seems, and then he leaves to go downstairs for some reason, I don't know.
To
get some water. And as he's walking down the stairs, there's a voluptuous lady standing at the base of the stairs. This voluptuous blonde woman that's like, oh, come here, big boy. And he's just like, okay, and just starts making out with her. No
as
questions asked at all. By the way, I guess they're not brainwashed anymore. They're all just like hanging out by fountains and smoking.
Oh, yeah, everyone's back to
everything's fine. Who gives a shit? So they're making out, and then it turns out it's actually Malcolm Graves. And he like shot his tongue out when they went to make out, and it coiled around and like slit his throat.
My question is, if he has the ability to create this facade of himself as a, like, as you say, voluptuous blonde woman, why does he have to kill his son to then look youthful? I mean, he obviously has this crazy ability where he's able to look completely different than how he actually looks.
Maybe it's like a Lo Pan thing from Big Trouble in Little China where he can appear as a younger, like, or Dracula, where these characters can appear as younger, but it's kind of an illusion they can do. It's dark magic they're using to appear younger, but they really are ancient old things. Again, they probably didn't actually think about this when making this movie. I'm sure Bram Stoker thought about this with Dracula. Maybe less so Ghoulies. There's the part where the stoner guys, they think it's somebody like hunched over a joint alone in a room. And that's the, hey, don't bogart that joint. I think it winds up being two ghoulies in a trench coat sitting on top of each other's shoulders or something.
No, wasn't it Greedy Gut and Grizzles like standing on top of each other?
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah, like the, you know, the... that trope about two kids with a trench coat.
Oh, I that went by really fast. I don't think I realized it was them.
And they throw a ghoulie at him.
That's what it is. It's them and they're holding a ghoulie.
Which,
that's right.
Fine,
I
whatever.
Guess they're friends with the ghoulies. So zombie Malcolm reanimates all of the dead people, all the dead partygoers. They all start kind of moving around the floor and stuff. And it just, there's one shot of a ghoulie playing the piano for some fucking reason. Just, I can get on board with that. That's a funny thing to see that you know, usually don't see that. Becky,
you're right.
Yeah, I know. I know I'm right. That's why I said it.
That's why I listened.
Yes. That's what I was thinking. There is a great falling down the stairs scene.
Oh, my gosh.
Becky tears off her glowing pentagram talisman. It's like, I've had enough of everything that's happened with my husband in this house, or my boyfriend in this house, and our friends and
my
everything.
My college-aged boyfriend.
Yes. And she's, like, standing at the top of the stairs and yells something, and then it's like, what? And then it's like, falls down the stairs.
She falls in slow motion. Like, how whenever I fall, like, really slowly to where I could have easily, like, fixed and
got
myself
up. Why didn't you put a foot out? Grab a railing.
She just, like, tumbles slowly down the stairs in, like, a way that I feel would be, if you're going to fall down the stairs, the safest way to fall. Like, she was rolling down on her side. It seemed like kind of a pleasant way to fall down the stairs.
Yeah, it didn't seem like she was, like, tumbling on her neck or anything like that.
No, but she super died.
Or so we think.
Well, she gets reanimated, but here she's dead, right? I think that's what they were trying to
communicate. Knocked out? I think this was after he reanimated all the bodies, so I think she's knocked out or something.
Well, remember the Malcolm, his dad, like, swipes his hand up and then she rises again.
Oh, that's right. And then she's like zombie seductress later on. That's right, because we have the big father and son encounter in the basement, in the spooky ritual basement. And Malcolm, the dad, starts trying to kiss his son. He's like, kiss me, and like pushes him against the walls. Like, I don't know what the fuck's going on here. And then he gets a trident in the back from old Wolfgang, the groundskeeper, who, great character from this film.
Yeah, all he did was appear in the first scene and take the baby away, appear in the next scene and just stare blankly. Mm-hmm. And he did a little bit of narration, and then he just saves the day at the end.
Narration where he will refer to the 36-year-old as like, the young boy took over the manor. Yeah. And it's like,
what is that an example of deus ex machina?
You're not asking the right person. I've always been confused by what that term means. But yeah, he just shows up, trident in the back, and they choke each other, old Wolfgang and Malcolm, and they're shooting bad lightning out of each other's eyes. And then a weird tornado, a soul tornado thing, goes around them, and they just disappear. All the friends are alive again. Mm-hmm. Whatever. They take off in a car, and
big
surprise. They think they're rid of the ghoulies. Bunch of ghoulies pop up in the back seat. Freeze frame, music by the executive producer and director of the film.
Yeah, I was going to say, the music is so, like, so not what you expect from, like, an end credits music. It was, like, not jaunty or anything like that. It was just kind of, like, the music that you would hear in the background of, like, a lounge and Sam and Max hit the road or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really casual horns.
Yes. Which is, like, the polar opposite of a movie from a similar era, which on paper had the exact same ending, basically. Big Trouble in Little China ends with the hero presumably driving away from all these troubles that have plagued him throughout the movie. And then, surprise, there's a monster hanging onto his vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then cut to a song played by the director of the film. But with that movie, it's Kurt Russell and John Carpenter.
So it's a lot better.
And with this, it's who the fuck knows. I looked up all these filmographies and not a lot going on here.
Oh, well, what's his name? Jack Nance is in this movie. He plays Wolfgang. So you might recognize him from Twin Peaks or Eraserhead.
All right, and Mariska Hargitay.
Yes.
But as far as, like, the main dude and the director and everything, like, not like the director actually was an actor in way more stuff than he was a director. But speaking of filmographies, I got some stuff for you here.
Lay it on me!
Two things here. I wanted to tell you about a very brief rundown of what Ghoulies 2, 3, and 4 are.
Okay.
Okay. Ghoulies 2 is set in a carnival funhouse.
Same characters?
No.
Okay.
It's going to be all different characters until we get to Ghoulies 4. So, Ghoulies 2, carnival funhouse called Satan's Den. So all these, like, you know, customers and fairgoers are going in there and they think it's a spooky thing. They think it's part of the attraction. Oops, it's Ghoulies.
Mm.
That's Ghoulies 2. Ghoulies
3. All Ghoulies.
Oh, I would watch that. There's a mistake at the Ghoulies factory.
Mm.
Yes. Ghoulies 3 is subtitled.
You think you're going to have a big bowl of cereal, but it's just Ghoulies.
Oops. Ghoulies. Yes. It's just pentagram talismans and Ghoulies. So, Ghoulies 3 as a subtitle, Ghoulies Go to College.
Okay.
So they are wreaking havoc on a college campus, and initially everyone thinks it's part of, like, the frats have a prank week, and so all this shit happening all over campus, they think it's just frats doing pranks.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, it's Ghoulies.
Okay.
Ghoulies 4, Jonathan, our main character from the first one, returns. He's an ex-occultist, now a cop.
All right.
And he's following his ex-girlfriend, who escaped a mental institution and is now trying to summon the Ghoulies again.
The girlfriend is trying to
yes,
summon the
Yes, after okay. she escapes the mental institution. This was direct-to-video.
Okay. That sounds on par with this first film.
Yep. Actually, they all reviewed lower from what I saw, so that should tell you a lot.
Well, this had a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. So.
Yeah, but like IMDb would have like the first one would be like 3.7, and then the next would be like, oh no, this does not live up to the great standard.
I feel like with IMDb, you'll get a good rating if it's one of those deals where it's like a movie that's so bad it's good.
Yeah,
and I think that's like a but if it's like actually bad and the rating's bad, that's pretty good indication that it's legitimately bad.
Yeah, yeah. You'll see a lot of like Miami Connection type movies or whatever. They get a bunch of like high scores mm-hmm. because it's like, oh, it's so bad it's good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. While I was looking up these Wikipedias, first of all, Ghoulies 2, 3, and 4 don't even have their own Wikipedia pages,
okay,
despite being
that's a good sign.
Released motion pictures. But there was attached to this Wikipedia article for the Ghoulies series was a list of films made by the director of Ghoulies 4, Jim Wynorski, which normally wouldn't bring up because we don't know anything about Ghoulies 4. I just saw a list of titles this guy directed, and I just want to tell you a little bit about this guy's filmography.
Sure.
All right. He directed 5 Bear Winch projects, which started coming out coincidentally right after the Blair Witch Project started coming out.
Bear Winch.
So there's the Bear B A R E.
Okay.
Winch project.
Okay. Are they like porn movies?
It's like it's that like software like Hard Ticket to Hawaii uh-huh. type like okay this is a very booby thing. It's not like you know penetration and shit or anything.
Okay.
But there's the Bear Winch Project, the Bear Winch Project 2, Scared Topless, Bear Winch Project 3, Nymphs of Misty Mountain, Bear Witch Project Uncensored, and The Final Chapter. Here are some other ones. Chopping Mall, which Tim Turry showed to me. That one's actually a pretty fun, bad 80s horror movie.
Wait, is that the one with the robots?
The robots in a mall, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think I heard the, like, how did this get made on that?
Yeah, yeah. That one was actually pretty fun. Other ones, Cheerleader Massacre, Sorority House Massacre 2, Busty Cops, Busty Cops Go Hawaiian,
mm-hmm.
The Witches of Breastwick 1 and 2, Camel Spiders, Cobra Gator, Dino Croc versus Super Gator, Shark Babes, which, you know, that mixes the babes and the beast things. He's got his beast movies and he's got his babe movies. This one, it's Shark Babes. Okay. We also have Sharkansaw Women's Prison Massacre.
All right. He really likes killing women, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah. There's Cleavage Field, which is mm-hmm. a clover field. There's Paranockers Activity and The Devil Wears Nada and The Hills Have Thighs. This guy has a beat that he is sticking with.
Wow.
He took some detours into, like, Creatureville, Sharknado type stuff, but always comes back to the booby horror.
Jeez. That's such a shitty joke that he made an entire movie, like, about multiple
like,
times.
Spanning decades, like, jeez. His career. Yeah. So that's old Jim Wynorski.
I feel like a lot of these movies are just a way for the director to surround himself with attractive women.
I feel like you hear about those like Hollywood characters and stuff. Like I remember reading about like, I don't know if it's the producer or the director of Hard Ticket to Hawaii, and it was like that was just his thing. He liked making movies, and he likes big boob babes, and like he's like, well, I'll just do this for my whole life. Like just always a very tan guy smoking cigars with sunglasses, and it's like Hollywood baby, right? That's the guy. That's Ghoulies.
That is Ghoulies.
I don't know where this falls under, like, it's obviously very bad. It's not a good movie at all.
No, if you haven't watched it yet, don't.
It's, there were those moments of just like, oh boy, this is real bad. In a way that was, I hesitate to say entertaining, but there were times I just kind of had to laugh at like, oh God, this sucks.
Yeah, it really sucked.
Yeah.
It was a bad film. But listen, we're here to pan the
yes.
stream.
I've heard people be like, hey, well, they keep watching all this stuff they like. What
yeah.
the hell's the deal
and
with
now
that?
Now we're doing it's some
like,
panning.
There you go. Some of the stuff we'll like, some of the stuff we won't. This one, I mean, I don't think either of us went into this thinking it was anything but exactly what it was.
Oh, like, yeah. I think halfway through the movie I told you, like, this is exactly what I thought it would be.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So, but hey, that's what we do. We will plunge these streaming services for you. Doing an Amazon Prime one for the first time in a while. They actually have a ton of movies on there. I was scrolling through that now that we're done with all the Ava stuff.
But it's not really, like, curated at all?
No, that's where we found, like, Love on a Leash and stuff, if that tells you anything. And there were, like, 2 versions of Ghoulies on here, and with 2 different posters of a ghoulie coming out of the toilet.
It was confusing.
Very confusing. But yeah, I don't know if I can recommend it unless you, like, really have a love of these type of movies, which you've probably seen Ghoulies if you do. So, we watched it for you, and we talked about it on
all
this episode here.
The listener.
Yes. Speaking of listeners, we want to thank, as always, our listener support participants, which listener support is a feature that Anchor uses. Anchor is who puts out our podcast. And if you go to panningthestream.com, you can click support this podcast and you can help us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month, or just do it once and cancel. It's all secure. It's easy to do. You can do it on mobile with Apple Pay. You can do it with a credit card online.
You can do it while you're walking down the street. You could do it while you're sitting in class. You could do it while you're at work. You could do it while you're eating cereal. You could do it while you're clipping your toenails. You could do it in the shower if you have like a waterproof phone.
Yeah, make sure it is first.
You can do it while you're on the beach lazing about. You can do it when... What else do people do?
Well, this glorious smartphone future where you can do everything from anywhere, right?
Yeah, you could do it all from
You can look at your damn phone
place.
Wherever you are. Mm. Yeah. So if you want to help us keep the lights on here at Panning the Stream and continue watching garbage so you don't have to, please help us out on listener support. It is genuinely a huge help, and we thank each
we
and
really
every one of you.
Appreciate it.
Yes, we thank everyone who supports, also everyone who just listens. You know, enjoy Panning the Stream the way you want to.
Yeah, but it's for you.
It is.
Have it your way.
And we've got something for you, the supporter, because each time we get a new supporter on Painting the Stream, we give them a custom Bonku, which we do. We're catching up on them and stuff, but like, you know, it always is going to take a little bit. If you support now, it might be a few weeks, and then you'll get your Bonku. But I believe we do have a new Bonku for this week, don't we?
We do have a Bonku. This week's Bonku is for William. And William, thank you so much for taking the time to support us. We really appreciate it. And I hope you get this Bonku tattooed on your body.
Boy.
Sitting on the edge, against the orange sunset, William breathed slowly.
Man, you're getting good at this. I mean, they're all really good. These are good haikus.
I like to paint a picture.
You do. Paint a picture for William.
I try to just make some kind of story and do a little snapshot.
With limited syllables.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great
That's
work.
The whole thing about the haiku. You got to get in and get out.
Yeah. Well, I hope William appreciates it, and I hope he thinks about it and contemplates on it. Mm. So thank you, William, and thank you to everyone who participates in listener support and anyone who just listens to this damn show. So that'll be it. Before we wrap up, Bonk, do you have any suggestions for the folks?
I do, Daniel.
What do you got?
I've recently been watching the show on HBO called Euphoria.
I knew that was going to be your suggestion.
Yes, it's really good. I was avoiding it for a little while because I was kind of under the impression that it was a show about young people, like for young people. Which it's like, I don't know, now that I'm getting older, whenever I see things that are like focused on the younger generation, I'm always scared that it's going to make me feel old or whatever.
Right, right.
Like, make me feel out of touch, which I am out of touch in so many ways.
Oh, we very much both are.
But this show is like so dark. And even though it's about young people, like the stuff they're dealing with in the show is just, it's presented beautifully. It's so well done. The production is amazing. The actors are incredible. And the stories are just so fucking just bonkers. It's really dark. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I watched a couple episodes on your suggestion, and I will echo what you said about it. It is a dark, like, it has got a tone it is going for.
Yeah.
And it's one of those shows that you finish an episode and it's like, God damn.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff that they're portraying in the movie, it's in the show, it's like, well, it does such a good job of, like, not only just showing what's going on, but showing what might lead to a character making that decision. And it does that so well. And it makes you think like, well, of course this would be like a natural response to the way that these kids were raised. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Just from what I saw too, it seems like, you know, I always hate it when pop culture and Hollywood tries to do stuff with like technology and it just like, it's so far off base. I've talked plenty about how like when they try to portray video games and movies and it's always beeps and bloops and sound effects in 2019. But they were really good with just like, it seemed like social media culture and like, you know, like some like cyberbullying stuff and like porn and things like that. Like it seemed to actually kind of like, it seemed like it was written by people that like existed in 2019 and understood what the internet was like.
Yeah.
You know?
It's based on a show, an Israeli show. But apparently this is like way darker. But the writer is this guy in his early 30s. So of course he's not going to be super out of touch with it. So yeah, it's really well done. I highly recommend it. If you've been putting it off for similar reasons, you should check it out. It's worth your time.
Cool. I have a quick suggestion, and I like the game Bloodstained quite a bit. If you happen to like Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, or any of those Metroidvania-style games, specifically my suggestion is, if you're playing that game and you like it, go for the Platinum Trophy in that. I've been going for the Platinum, And it definitely involves a lot of grinding and stuff like that, and having to look up guides on how, you know, farming spots and like where to get these shards and increase the odds of like drops and stuff like that. But it is so fun to move around that game, and especially late game once you get all these abilities leveled up and everything. It is just so much fun darting everywhere and trying to kind of mop up this list of like filling out your demon list and your shard list and cooking all these things for the items. I have had a blast long after I've beaten all the boss fights and 100% of the map and everything.
That's awesome.
I really, really enjoyed it. As a big, big fan of those Castlevania games, this has hit on every level for me.
Yeah, you seem to have really been enjoying it.
I super love it. I still got a couple things I got to mop up for the item trophy before I get the platinum, but I would highly suggest going for the platinum in that one, or you know, whatever it is, the 1,000 achievements on Xbox, or let's not pretend anyone cares about Steam achievements, but you know, whatever you want to do, just 100% the hell out of the game. It's a lot of fun. But that's my suggestion for now. If you at home have suggestions or recommendations or feedback for us, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything like in the coming weeks that we're like definitely like immovable on. So if anyone has any suggestions, we're very open.
Yeah, I think we're in a spot here where we kind of want to do some one shots because, you know, we have done this year, we've done long stretches on like My Hero. We did five weeks in a row of Evangelion. And so we want to kind of mix it up here, and that's why it was fun to do. We did Glow, but that was a whole season in one shot.
Right.
This was fun to do just like one quick one shot movie thing. So we'll probably do a couple, you know, just quick shots, you know, one movie or a couple episodes of a show or something like that before we will get into My Hero Academia season 3. We're very excited about that, but we want to give it folks a break. If they're not into anime or anything like that, or the My Hero stuff, we'll do some more of the kind of like traditional bumming around Hulu and Netflix type stuff, looking for things to talk about.
And so, if you did start listening to us because of the Eva episodes and you're listening to this now, thanks for continuing to listen. It's really cool of you to stick around.
We do appreciate that. We know that when we do these big anime shows, it definitely brings in we see the peak in viewers come in, and so to see people hang around afterwards is always cool to see. So we hope you like what you're listening to. We certainly like sitting here and talking to you folks and watching shows on the couch with old Razor Dog here, who's laying on the floor next to us right now. So I guess that's it for this week. So thanks so much to everyone for listening. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, Tom.
And Bonk, thanks as always for joining me here on Panning the Stream.
Thanks to you, Daniel.
We'll see you all next week.
Bye.